The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 158. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How you doing?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
Sneaking in right under the intro, Mr. Brian Manjoma.
You know what, X and Luigi? Okay, 660.
Oh, man. Brett Murdoch.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Brad, we fucked up the whole thing with Brian. He showed up. Now we can't, you know, do our thing. But we'll get him next time.
We'll save it. We got you. We got you, motherfucker.
Adam Vale.
COD, baby.
All right. And we got a very special guest tonight. The man with a million himself, Mr. Randall Thor. What's going on, man?
What's going on, Tony? Thanks for inviting me to the Throwdown. I'm looking forward to talking about whatever you guys have in mind.
Yeah, man. Just to lay it all bare, because, you know, obviously today, you know, this week was the launch of the Xbox One X, and I wanted to have, like, a prominent member of the Xbox community on our show to tell us about the system and about Xbox in general. And originally, we were going to have your buddy Jez on, but, you know, he's in Germany now, so it didn't really work. I'm like, okay, you literally came right to mind. I'm like, okay, we got to get fucking Rand on, because I wanted to have you on Throwdown anyway. So this is like perfect timing. So, you know, I hope you have fun with us. Sit back and relax, man. Let's have some fun tonight, boy.
All right. Yeah. I think Jez actually mentioned, he was like, yeah, I would do Tony's show, but it's like super like early for him or super late, one of the two, you know?
Yeah. I think at that point it's both super late and super early, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I always have to give our buddy Brian here respect, because he's from England. It's like 3 a.m. for you now, Brian, isn't it?
Yep, it's like half 3.
Damn. That's awesome. Half 3. All right, man. So as we usually do, since you're our guest, we're going to, you know, we want you to, you know, let the people know about you. So what is your gaming origin story, man? How did it all start for you as a little kid, man? Where did it all start?
Oh, the superhero origin story?
Yes, man.
Oh, man. Okay, so I had an Atari, you know, but I don't have any memories of it. So my first gaming memory is walking into my buddy's house in Wisconsin and seeing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on an NES and thinking it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. So I asked for one, and I got one for my birthday, and I think I had like 200 Nintendo games over the course of time, NES games.
Damn!
That's a lot.
Yeah. That is a lot.
what were your favorites, man?
I honestly, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, Super Mario 3. It's hard to remember them all. Like those were the ones that kind of like stick out to me, you know. And then from Nintendo, okay, this is where it kind of diverges. I went to Genesis.
Hmm.
Went to Sega, and I had the Genesis. I had the Sega CD. I had the Sega 32X. Then I had the Saturn, then I had the Dreamcast, got a PlayStation, PlayStation 2, and then I finally picked up another Nintendo system. I went from the NES and never touched another Nintendo system to the GameCube.
Wow.
So I skipped out on, I've never played a Super Nintendo game before, ever. I had played some 64 games because my friends had them, like WCW versus NWO Revenge and stuff like that.
The best ones.
That is, love those games. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, got an Xbox right when Halo 2 came out, because I was feeling the hype. Microsoft was very good at marketing that game. And I fell in love with Halo 2. I played that game online for every single day for a year. But at that point in time, I was a PlayStation fanboy.
Wow.
Like, to me, PlayStation was gaming at that juncture. You know, because there were so many great titles on the PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 and third-party titles like Final Fantasy, Metal Gear, Grand Theft Auto. You know, like that's where I would game. So I got the Xbox. It's just like, I'm going to play Halo. And I got the 360, and I was waiting for PlayStation 3. But then, like, Sony was all like, oh, well, you got to get a second job, and our fans would just buy this system if it came with no games and a brick. And it was $600, and I just, like, turned my back on Sony.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't have that, you know? Because at the time, like, $600 was, like, super expensive.
It still is.
It still is, yeah. But, you know, especially back then when, like, I think I was, what, how old was I back then? 18, 19, 20, something like that. It's like, I can't afford $600.
You're like, with what money am I going to buy this thing?
Yeah, who's going to give me this money to buy this system? So I stayed with the 360. I kind of became addicted to achievements. And I've been with the Xbox since then. Didn't pick up a PS3 at all. And I actually got a PlayStation 4 this year. So I've been kind of working through, like, Last of Us and on the Uncharted series and stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of my history, you know? So play a lot of games.
That's awesome. And obviously, you know, since you are the man with a million, right? How did that journey start? Like, where did you decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to go for this, man. Like, how did that all start?
You know, it just, because I had so many games, like I mentioned, I had 200 for Nintendo and like I had a bunch for Genesis. Like I was always playing one game and going to the next, right? I had a Gamefly account back in 2003 and I would just churn and burn games from Gamefly. So like that kind of like getting gamer score kind of went well in what I would do normally because I would want to play every game that came out. So like after a couple months and there was like a leaderboard, some fan made like mygamercard.net. I noticed I was in like the top like 50 or something. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then I met some friends. We were talking about Strip Club DJ earlier. He was not a friend, but, you know, I stuck with it. Even when they started banning cheaters, I didn't get banned cause I never cheated. Cause I was very vocal about not doing that stuff.
Do you remember when you could transfer over save files when that was a thing?
I never did that either. I stayed pure. So, and then eventually I ended up becoming friends with Phil Spencer and Mike Ybarra and a whole bunch of people on the Xbox team. Phil invited me out to E3 to break a million gamer score on stage with them last year, which I did, which is, you know, probably, you know, highlight of my gaming career in quotes. Was being able to do that at E3. So, but you know, like after that, I kind of like tapered off on the gamer score stuff because once you hit a million, I mean, what's next, right?
Two million.
2 million just doesn't have the same ring as a million, though.
Yeah. It's the power. It's the power creep.
And do you remember when they started giving, because PlayStation is doing this now, where it's like, oh, if you get certain trophies and stuff, and we'll give you some credit toward, you know, in-game purchases and stuff like that on the PSN network. Remember when Xbox did that? Because I remember they were doing that if you got like 1,000 points in a game or so-and-so within a certain month, and they would give you certain points, money pretty much, currency for the Xbox Live service. They took that away, and I think they need to bring that back because that was something that motivated me to keep going with getting the Chivos. You know, so as you're with the 1 million, I mean, you need something to motivate you to keep going.
Yeah, I wish Microsoft would be like, you can trade in your gamer score one point for a dollar. I'll fly out to Redmond and trade in my million to get $1 million. Let's make that happen.
Shit.
Sign a petition.
Yeah.
Yeah, but going back a little bit, how did you become like friends with Phil Spencer and those guys? Like, how did you first, like, did they contact you? Did you contact them? How did that work?
So I had no contact with anybody from Microsoft forever. And then I ended up getting Halo 5 early from a friend because I streamed for him. And through, I don't know if you know Southbound 110. I became friends with Southbound and yes, your nemesis, Tim Dog.
Oh, no.
And through them, I ended up meeting Phil, playing Halo with him. And he added me to his friends list. And, you know, he would invite me to play like anytime he got on Halo. And, you know, we would just always talk about just games. But then one day he was just like, you know what would be awesome? I'm like, what? He's like, how about you come out to E3 and break a million gamer score with us on stage? And I was like, yeah, that would be incredible. You know, like I've never been to E3. So, you know, he hooked me up with their PR, and then it was all just kind of like talking to their PR, you know, going over all that stuff in preparation. But yeah, that's, I mean, that's, I met him because of a couple people in the community who knew him. So that's basically cool. And then through Phil, I met, you know, pretty much like Mike Ybarra and like all the other Xbox executives and people at Xbox that I game with on like a daily basis and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
That's cool. I mean, you know, one thing about the, you know, I've always said about the Xbox community is that they've always, you know, Microsoft always seemed to do something really nice. You know, like we were at E3, you know, me and Tony and Chris have gone to E3 a couple of times, but always on the floor, they always have like, you know, a good collection of like, you know, Xbox, you know, guys that are just that. I think last year they gave them a shirt, gave them cool shirts with their gamer tags and everything on it. So I always thought that sort of stuff was really cool.
Yeah, they're very much invested in community in a way that Sony's really not. Sony's very much hands-off approach, which is just different strategies for how you approach these things. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I know this is a business. You know, like Phil Spencer might be friends with me, but Microsoft, the corporation, just wants that nozzle in my wallet taking my money, right?
Yep.
And it's just a different approaches to how they do things. So Microsoft's very much community focused, ear to the ground, want to make their fans happy, while Sony's very much, I don't know if that's more of a Japanese centric approach, kind of remaining like hands off and stuff. But I mean, it seems to be working for them as well because they're kicking ass.
Like, yeah. I always tell the story that I have with Major Nelson where he was talking about there was a Pac-Man championship tournament thing going on in the city. And I was like, oh, man. So I sent him a message, an email. I was like, oh, you know, I'd love to go to something like that. And he said, boom, you're on the list. You know, and just like that, I didn't have to do anything else. Like,
that's crazy. That, man.
Yeah. So he just threw me on the list and I went.
Yeah, like Major Nelson, like even, you know, Adam, you have a bunch of stories where he's like, yeah I'm going to be at this bar on this day.
Yeah, Barcade and stuff. He was like, come down, meet, we'll have some drinks and stuff like that. He was very cool. You know, a few people, even with because I have the Gears of War tattoo, and I got to talk to Cliffy just through emails and stuff, and then he was like, yeah, add me on the list. I add him on the friend list, and, you know, a lot of them were very cool people.
Yeah, I mean, they all are. I mean, they're all gamers. They're all really cool people. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where you, like, I don't want to, like, it's just, you know what, I don't know how to say this.
Keep it real, man. They want your money. This throwdown, man. Say it.
they want your money. I mean, that's what they exist for, right? You know, and it's just, I want Xbox to succeed, not only because I think the video game industry needs a healthy Microsoft to help make Sony better and Nintendo better, right? I also want to see my friends succeed, you know, because what, I mean, if Microsoft went under, like, all the jobs that would be lost.
It would be horrible.
So it's like everything's there. It, you know, it helps keep Sony in check because we've been there. We've lived through arrogant Sony, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to see arrogant Sony come back.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get another job, you know, to buy a fucking console.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things you got to keep in the back of your mind. Like, they want to sell you content. You know, they may be friends with you, but like, the corporations just want you to buy games and subscribe to their services and buy microtransactions and buy loot boxes and stuff. So it only goes so far. And yeah, I've butted heads with some of them over my videos because I do critique Xbox from time to time when I feel they need it. And they do listen and they do watch because I got in trouble for that Crackdown video.
Uh-oh.
I got in big trouble for that one.
Yeah, but at the same time, that shows that, you know, you're an honest. Like, here's the thing about, like, you know, because we both know on both sides have them, the zealous fanboys, where nothing that the companies do is wrong. Like, to me, you're a real fan because you actually will point out something that's wrong because you want the company to succeed, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, if I noticed, like, I didn't like the way they were handling Crackdown. So I was like, yo, like, this is a joke. You're making the game look like a joke. Not that the game is a joke. Right.
Yeah. It's the way they're presenting it. Yeah.
But the way you're presenting it is makes it look like a joke, and they didn't appreciate that. I got a lot of pushback for when I was like, "Yo, focus more on games and not controllers." Even though I love the controllers they make, I would love to see, like, "Hey, we got more games coming for you." So I got pushback on that video. You know, I've talked about the exclusive stuff with Xbox. Like, they need to do better. They need to be like more exclusive content, not shutting down studios and canceling games, but like building new studios and making new IPs that aren't, you know, Halo 4s and Gears, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't constantly repeat that. It's like I say it one time and it's there, you know, and then if it changes, then I'll change my position. But as much as I like the X, much as I love the X, you know, there's still the underlying issues that Microsoft has. But I think they'll get there. I mean, Phil Spencer had some quotes this week saying that they're going to build, which is always good to hear, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about that. All right. So, you know, as since you mentioned it, the X, let's talk about that. So this week. That's all you get. So yeah, the Xbox One X, the console formerly known as Project Scorpio, has been released to the masses, and you're among them. So give us your, I guess, informal review of the system so far.
I'm really impressed with what they've done, and I'll say this right out of the bat: I hated the original Xbox One, and I hated what they thought people wanted. They thought people wanted TV sports with the side of gaming, right? Yeah. I couldn't stand that approach. Mm-hmm. But what the Xbox One X signifies to me is Microsoft's recommitment and refocus on just pure gaming, because that is what this console is. It is a gaming machine first and foremost. So that it's everything that's built into it, that's what it does. It plays games the best out of any console on the market, right? It the whole like user interface setup, like I downloaded all these 4K patches on my Xbox One S. I backed them up on the external hard drive. I plugged it into my X when I got it, and I was ready to go. You know, I downloaded a 15-minute like system update for the X, but after that, it was like, I'm ready to go. I have 35 Xbox One enhanced games that are already pre-downloaded with 4K content, and it was like, this couldn't have been any easier to get all this stuff there. And then when you actually start playing it and you see Gears has a 4K mode and a 1080p 60 mode, and I'm impressed. Like, I'll be the first to mention, I don't game on PC, right? So I barely played any 4K content. And I'm not one to be really impressed by resolution, period. But I was sitting there, like, looking at this, and I'm like, oh my God, like, this looks incredible. In the same way, when I first started Uncharted 4 on the PS4 Pro, my mouth was ajar. I was like, this is amazing what this game looks like. So I was like, okay, Gears 4 looks incredible. Assassin's Creed looks amazing. Even Halo 5 was updated, and it looks like a different game. So I understand that it's expensive. I mean, $500 is not cheap. But to me, it was a no-brainer because I play everything on Xbox. I own 1,000 Xbox One games, right? And this is where I play all the games. So for me, it was like, I'm going to get a system that plays all these games better at 4K, which I own a 4K TV, so I can take full advantage of that. To me, it was worth every single penny to see the improvements, not only in visual quality, but also performance-wise, jumping from the previous Xbox One S to this system. It was a no-brainer for me, but I can understand why some people are like, hey, I have a beast PC. Why would I want to? I'd be like, well, don't. Play on your PC. Or I'm a PlayStation gamer. Well, if you're a PlayStation gamer and that's where all your friends are and that's where you bought all your content,
that's your ecosystem.
I couldn't convince you to switch over, but it made perfect sense for someone like me, you know, if you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, but that's what I was telling people. It's like, okay, if you have a 4K TV and you want 4K gaming, get an Xbox One X. It makes perfect sense. But yeah, on the flip side, just like you said, you're a PC gamer. That's a bit of a tougher sell. You could just buy another like graphics card with that money, you know. But you're right about that. But what about the Xbox, like, you know, regular Xbox games that like do they receive any kind of bump if they're not patched? The reason I ask that is because apparently The Witcher 3 runs at 60 frames a second before the patch.
Yeah, there are some games that run better that aren't even patched because just the hardware just making it better. I saw those videos with Witcher. And I almost wish I wasn't all digital, because apparently you need the physical disc copy. Because
I guess weird.
It's not necessarily weird, because the digital version always receives all the updates all the time. And at one point, when one of the DLCs came out, they locked that game to 30 frames, where before it was a dynamic resolution and unlocked frame rate originally. So the only way to get it to 60 frames is if you have the disc copy and you don't update the game, and then the X will bump that up to 1080p 60 frames. So it does make a lot of your other games in your backlog run better. Like, I don't know if you guys ever hear of a game called Mr. Shifty. Yep. I know it came out a little bit ago. So, and I'm going to bring this up because I played it recently. On the Xbox One S, the last third of that game was virtually unplayable for how much it lagged.
Whoa.
And if you guys know, you've played the game, like, it's very fast-paced, right? So I replayed it on the X just to see in those same sections it ran flawlessly, no frame drops. And this isn't a game that's enhanced. It's just the power of the system making that game better.
Now, did you try Just Cause 3, which had all kinds of issues? Did you try that one?
I don't actually own Just Cause 3, okay. So I couldn't test it out. And I'm not sure anybody's really done any videos about that game, but it sounds like it probably will run some stuff better, no matter what it is, but to take full advantage of it, I think they need the patches.
Can I just, like, jump in, like, really quickly to speak on Just Cause 3? Great game, by the way. But yeah. Apparently it is still CPU bound, and even though the Scorpio does have the Scorpio, the One X still has a more powerful CPU, it's still not enough to chug it out, so it still has some issues.
And that's why we're going to have new systems in 3 years.
Yeah. By the way, on that note, quickly, I want to give a shout out to Amazed Gamer, who sent $5 to us through the Super Chat. Thank you for that. And he also wants to ask us, even though it's not a question show, he threw us money, so whatever. Do you think Xbox One X is bad timing with PS5 around the corner, Xbox One being future-proof? I see PS5 2019. 2019's not around the corner, bro. That's still a while away, you know? Rand, do you want to answer that real quick, man?
I think PS5 is 2020. Yeah. I don't think they want to end this gen just that early. So yeah. I would if I had to guess, if I had like a, you know, I put all my money on the house, you know, to bet. Like, I would guess PS5 2020, next Xbox 2021.
Yeah, I've been saying I believe the PS5 will be 2019 because of the 3-year gap between each system. You know, PS4 was 2013, PS4 Pro 2016, 2019 for PS5. You know, 3 years in between. But I could see 2020 as well. Either one of those two is going to happen. But I do agree with you that whatever year the PS5 comes out, the Xbox 2, I'm plugging your show right now, Xbox 2 will be out the year afterwards. So the other thing is, because I saw some comparisons, because they were showing 360 games on there. Assassin's Creed, I'm talking about the original Assassin's Creed with Altair, looked great on the fucking Xbox One X, dude. That was crazy. Did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that Microsoft done is not only are they preserving older games through backwards compatibility, which I've said many times, it's a great feature. I just have absolutely zero use for it, right? But it's cool to have. Assassin's Creed is updated. Gears of War 3 is updated. Mirror's Edge, which looks amazing now. Like, it's incredible that they're going back with this and updating certain games on the 360. And then you have the original Xbox games like Ninja Gaiden Black and stuff, and KOTAR, which look way better.
Yeah.
I wish this was kind of more widely done by like everybody in the industry. Like, it'd be great if Sony did this and Nintendo, where it was just like everything was backwards compatible, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you don't have to rebuy stuff.
Yeah, the reason I bring up Assassin's Creed is because that, you know, the original Assassin's Creed, that's not a patched game. It's just the regular game. If you just run it on Xbox One X, it just looks better without any patches at all. That's what I found crazy. You know, some games on PS4 do that, but not a lot. You know, PS4 Pro, not a lot do that. Which I found kind of interesting. Go ahead, man.
And then just taking old games like that, I mean, because, you know, the one thing about, like, for PlayStation is that all those PS3 titles, those are kind of useless now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, a lot of those have to be redeveloped in order for them to run on the new PlayStation 4. But for, you know, something like Microsoft's Xbox, it's like, all right, you know, it doesn't need that much to, you know, to get it to work.
I will say there is like a couple drawbacks. Data mainly. I have a data cap from Comcast, and I hit it already in 9 days.
Damn, yeah, because you have to download all that shit, right?
Well, yeah, and then the patches aren't necessarily small. So I'm approaching 980 gigabytes of data in 9 days. So, and I have a 1 terabyte, so I'm going to hit that, obviously. But that'll only be for this month, because obviously the patches will be less as we go along. And you're going to need bigger storage space. You know, the 1 terabyte on the Xbox One X isn't enough. I mean, if you only play one or two games a year, sure, it's enough. But for gamers like us, you know, do podcasts and talk about this stuff, like, it's not. You're going to have to invest in external hard drive space. So
I got 4 gigs for the Xbox One and for the PS4.
Yeah, I have 14 terabytes for the Xbox.
Damn, that's good. That's fucking good.
That's good. You're set, bro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I own 1,000 games, so I got to have the space to have the majority of them anytime I want to play them, you know?
So when you get a full 1,000 one, you don't just remove it? Cause
no, I do. If it's a small game and I get the 1,000, it's deleted. But if it's like Grand Theft Auto 5 or a bigger AAA game, I keep that installed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We like playing that GTA here.
Yeah,
and GTA.
Yeah. We'll always go back, and it's always like reliable, you know. The other thing I want to ask you is, because, okay, how well do you think the Xbox One X is going to do after the holidays? Obviously, it's going to do very well. Now it's a new system; people are going to buy it. Come January, how well is it going to do? The reason I'm asking you that is because you saw what happened with the PS4 Pro. It had big hype when it came out, and then after January, that's it. You hardly heard anybody talking about it, you know. So you think that same fate is going to, happen to the Xbox One X?
Possibly. I mean, it all depends on the games coming out in the future that take advantage of it. I mean, if we get a situation where like Red Dead Redemption 2 is maybe like significantly better on the X than the Pro, there might be more interest in the system for those cases, like that game, Far Cry 5. There's a lot of games coming out at the beginning of next year. But I mean, of course, it's just going to drop like a rock, you know, as soon as January comes. Like all the fanboys, you know, I include myself in that, we'll all buy it day one. You know, I saw Pactor saying that he thinks it sold 500,000 day one. So the question is like, was this going to leak out to the more casual market? And I think Microsoft's done a good job of marketing it. They're especially done a way better job than Sony did. Like Sony didn't even really treat the Pro like a new launch of a system in the way that Microsoft did. But I don't think $500 is too expensive, in my opinion, in this day and age for just a console. Most people are happy playing Madden and Grand Theft Auto at the cheapest way possible. And that's why the Slim exists. So I think it'll probably run into sales, sales hell come, you know, February, March. But like I mentioned, if those games come out and there's like big improvements, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it trends higher than the Pro, you know, comparatively that from the previous year. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's interesting because but the thing is with the Scorpio, and you know, these guys have said it, you know, Phil Spencer, it wasn't really made for the casual audience, right? Like the regular S, which I believe will probably drop down to 200 this holiday season, that's made for the casual, you know, the GTA type of people. The Scorpio, I keep calling it Scorpio, the Xbox One X is for you, you know, like, you know, the enthusiast guys. So my question is, do you think it'll, like, actually, this is kind of a stupid question, but I'm asking anyway, do you think it'll do well among the enthusiast guys? And I think it will. You know, so I think, I think its success should be judged on those merits, not how many systems it sold. Like, how many systems did it sell to the right crowd? You know what I mean?
Right. I think the Xbox One X will sell to a larger percentage of Xbox fans than the PS4 Pro sold to PlayStation fans. Right? Because I think the PS4 was just a better system overall. I mean, in the beginning of this gen, it was like every single game was better on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Right? It was like a cheaper system, and Xbox fans are just like, well, Star Wars Battlefront is 720p, but it's on PlayStation, it's 900. Now you finally get a system that's like the best, right? That Xbox fans have been waiting for. So I think the percentage of uptake, you know, versus PlayStation for the Pro, I think it'll be higher. So like, I think they said what? PlayStation said it was like 20%, like 1 out of 5.
Yeah, 20%.
Sales are PS4 Pro. I think you're probably going to maybe look at like maybe 30%. For Xbox, like a higher percentage.
Yeah, I could see 30% Xbox fans buying. I could see that, you know, because they've wanted a more powerful system. You know, they you know, I mean, granted, everybody's wanted a more powerful system this generation. Because, you know, the big thing with this generation was the systems are underpowered. But the Xbox obviously got the brunt of that because it was underpowered. So, yeah, I could see that 30% for sure, you know.
Yeah, and, Xbox One, the original one, was just... It was just a travesty of a system, dude.
Yeah. It really was. You know, here's the thing. I have an Xbox One original. I like it, you know, for the games. But I, you know, it really does feel like set games were like a afterthought for it. Like the media stuff it does is great, but the gaming stuff, it, like, you know, with the new update now, it's a lot, you know, quicker and stuff, a lot snappier. But man, it was rough, boy. Like just navigating the menus and shit.
I remember I got my day one edition, and when I opened it up, I'm like, yo, this shit is huge. All right, I knew it was big, but then it had the external power brick. And I'm like, you put the power supply in the slim version, remember, for 360. So why did they go back to that? That pissed me off. But I don't know
how many
issues would connect, though. I like to record that. I like that.
My theory about that whole thing is that they were just overcompensating for Red Ring of Death. They were like, we're making sure this shit doesn't get overheated.
So well, yeah, right. It was quiet.
Put all those extra fans in it, like it has like a big fan on the top and like a big vent on it.
Yeah. So I mean, my opinion on Xbox One, the main reason why it didn't succeed as well as kind of what 360 did was because I think Sony got their freaking shit together. I think that was the biggest.
Oh yeah, that they did. They got their act together, and Microsoft just. Diarrhea all over
the
place.
They got complacent. They thought, oh, they're not going to recover from all that hacking. Remember PSN being down for so long and all the other shit that they had problems and self-processor. Yeah,
and here's my thing. Like, Sony has always been a bigger brand than Microsoft, or at least the Xbox and PlayStation. PlayStation has always been a bigger brand than Xbox. So we had that kind of semi anomaly with the 360 where almost everything went right. They had all the games, they had the exclusive tie-ins, they had the better performance with third party games. So everything was great. And then in the meantime, PS3 had like the $600 system with the difficult architecture and, you know, like all these things that people were not attracted to to start. Plus they didn't release that many games to start with. It gave Microsoft sort of like a false hope that people gravitated towards the Xbox brand like just blindly.
But I also think it was also another thing about it is that, you know, let's just be honest, Xbox was the first one out of the gate, Xbox 360, you know?
Right.
So a year almost, right?
Yeah, yeah, like it totally went over, you know, I mean, with I think the Wii came out before that, but I mean, it was the first truly next
gen. No, the Wii console. Came out after. It came out, okay. I think, same
it
month.
It was the first truly next generation console. I definitely think that counted for a lot. And they had a pretty decent, like, launch, you know.
And the pricing.
And rising and the pricing and all that
cameo.
Stuff.
Cameo.
Elements of Power, son. Yo, but when Gears of War came out, that's it. That changed the whole landscape.
And that was 2006.
Yep.
That was 2006 when the PS3 came out. Like, yeah, so like all these things led to Microsoft having a way harder time the second generation. Because at the end of the day, PS3 outsold the 360 last gen. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, but that's still a loss for Sony, though, because they lost, like, what, 70 million consoles in the transition? They lost the market share.
Oh, no, no. I'm not saying it in terms of who made more money. I'm just saying which one did people buy more of? Like, what market was – which one had a bigger market share?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the Wii won, technically.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Not even technically. It factually won over both of them.
Well, then it was funny because the 360 outsold the Wii here in the States after a while, but obviously couldn't catch up worldwide. This whole gen has been weird because, like, I've always wondered what would happen if Microsoft released the Xbox One without the Kinect at the same specs as the PS4 and the same price. How does this generation play out any differently?
I think it does. For a little while, we could then get all those exclusives, and then they die again. That's downfall. It's the gaming. It's the game.
Yeah, I think Microsoft does better, obviously, than they did before, because Kinect was just a big crutch to Xbox. Like it added $100 to the price, and they could have started this generation with $100 benefit.
Or have two SKUs. You know, that was the thing I was hearing before. Remember, they were like, oh, they're going to have two SKUs. One's going to be the 500, and that's going to have the Kinect, and the other one won't. And that didn't happen.
Well, remember, this like the OS at like required the Kinect until they changed it, remember?
Yeah.
But then I don't know. I'm really upset about that still, because I was a huge 360 guy.
Me too.
It Microsoft just forced me to like take on PlayStation as my primary console.
Yeah, me too. I wound up switching because of that, but it was reverse. It was like I had my 360 as my main console, and my PS3 was just for their exclusives. Yep. And then when I got same thing, Xbox One, I had my PS4. I was like, yeah, same thing. It'll just be for that. And then I just spent more and more time on my PS4. I'm like, shit, this is it. The OS, everything just worked. And I just switched. And I remember telling my buddies, and they're like, you're full of shit. I'm like, no, I'm telling you. They're like, oh, you'll be right back. And it has not happened. And most of my buddies have jumped ship also.
Yeah, Rand, what do you think about that? Like, you know, some of the Xbox guys, like these guys, you know, Carlos and Adam, they've been into Xbox since Xbox, you know, back in the day, the original one. Yeah. They jumped ship. What do you make of, like, the fact that some people have done that this generation?
I mean, people go where the games go or where their friends go, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, none of my friends jumped ship, so, like, I didn't go. I thought about it. Like, trust me, like, when they were talking about, we're going to change the way you own games and how you do all that stuff, and we're going to have Kinect 24/7, and it's console's got to be online. I was like, yo, guy, like, I was like talking to my friends. I'm like, yo, like, let's go to Sony, dude. You know, I don't want to, like, this is ridiculous, you know? And they got rid of everything, and everybody got the console. So I was like, all right, well, you know, all my friends are here. I'm not about to go start on PlayStation, not knowing anybody. But I mean, I get it. Like, a lot of people were like, you know what? PlayStation's the better value at the time. Like, it was $100 cheaper and it was more powerful. And I mean, I don't fault anybody for jumping ship. I mean, Microsoft, they went through a lot of stuff in 2013, a lot of stupid decisions made by people that are no longer with the company. So,
yeah, you know, our buddy Don Matrick. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, him.
Oh, man. But Manny, I know you wanted to ask Rand something about like the current state of Xbox and all that.
Well, you kind of already asked that, so
what do you think about, you know, the changes Phil Spencer has done, and you know, how do you see the Xbox division moving forward? Because it seems like things have really been turning around within the last year or so.
Yeah, I think Phil. Honestly, I think Phil saved the Xbox brand. I mean, it's hard to underestimate how much a dumpster fire Don Matrick left the brand in 2013. So it's like, Phil said he wanted to do three things when he took the role. It was fix the hardware, and it's fixed, right? I know you got to spend $500, but it's fixed. He wanted to focus on backwards compatibility and Xbox Live and those services, which they're there. And he said the third thing was the games. You know, he said at this E3 that he just signed some deals for some games that are a couple years away. And, you know, he's talking about buying new studios and or you know, building new studios, which goes to the, you know, the concept that Xbox doesn't have any games. So I think the future is bright. I think Phil's vision is the right vision for the brand. Some people won't like it because I don't think they're going to focus on single player oriented games like Sony does. I don't think Microsoft wants anything to do with that because they're very data focused company, very analytic focused company. And they see the writing on the wall where gamers want long-lasting, forever-type games like Overwatch and Rainbow Six Siege, where there's continuous revenue coming in through loot boxes and microtransactions. So Microsoft views single-player games not in a favorable light. So the single-player games they'll make will be smaller in scale, but I think they're going to be heavily focused on multiplayer stuff. But the exclusives, I think, will come. But I'm not going to say wait to 2018 and have E3 to wait to see them. It's like, I'm just saying, I think they'll show up. Because Phil's like, he doesn't lie. Like, I know the guy. Like, he doesn't, like, what he says is exactly what he means. It's just that I'm not sure a lot of people are going to like the direction they take the company. Whereas, like, because The thing is like, Sony has God of War and all these great-looking single-player games, which I can't wait to play. I've said before, Sony's exclusives look way better than Microsoft's. And I would rather play Spider-Man over anything that Microsoft currently has announced, right? But of course, I get labeled a PlayStation hater.
Oh,
but
man. The guy with a million fucking gamer scored, you're a Sony guy. Come on, man.
I mean, the games are the games. Like, yeah. you know what the best game is I played this year?
What was it?
The Last of Us.
Oh, wow. The original one. The second
one. Best game. Wow. The second best game I played this year.
Uncharted?
Uncharted 4.
Wow.
Like, I'll give you props where you got to give them, man. Like, Sony, and you know, they create some really incredible single-player games. That's just not what Microsoft's going to do. You know, so I think people need to realize that. The games will come. It's just, I don't know if they're going to be in the form people want them to be.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the general, like, direction the industry seems to be going in. You know, like, shunning single-player games, but... Then again, you know, we're talking about Xbox possibly going in that route, but then, you know, this year they released Cuphead, which is one of my favorite games of the year, you know, and that's purely single player. So do you think we're still going to get games like that? Because
I think I mentioned that I think the single player type games will be smaller, indie focused, something on the level of like a Recore. You know, I don't think Microsoft does something like a Horizon Zero Dawn. So it'll be smaller budgeted indie titles that maybe they do. But I'm not saying single players, like Halo 6 is going to have a single player campaign, yeah, without a doubt. And so is Gears 5. It's just that I don't think Microsoft is suddenly be like, here's a Horizon Zero Dawn equivalent from us, right? Because they tried doing Quantum Break. The game was like $80 million to make. It bombed. Mm-hmm. Right, they tried doing Rise, it didn't sell well. They tried doing Sunset Overdrive, it didn't do well. Microsoft tried partnering with people to give exclusives. The problem is the fan base on Xbox didn't buy them.
Let me ask you about that. Why do you think that? Oh, by the way, every game you named,
Tony. By the way, your voice is all robot-y.
Oh shit, I can't do anything about that. I think, hold on, am I still robot-y?
Yeah, you're still robot-y.
Because I can't end the show.
I'm sure on your side we sound robot-y.
No, you sound fine.
Okay.
All right. Usually, if that happens, you just drop out of the call and come back.
That's the thing. If I drop out of the call.
No, if you drop out of the call, it won't end. As long as you just exit out of it.
No, he's streaming off his OBS.
This shit'll be done, son.
Well, then don't do that because it'll end.
All right, I'm going to try some. Just keep talking a little bit.
Talk about yourselves.
You know, one of the things that, like, yeah, I agree, it's not a Microsoft problem with the single player issue, because if you think about it, one of the best single player developers, BioWare, they're letting go of all their single player stuff, man. That Anthem is going to be the whole multiplayer, that is going through the multiplayer phase, that Overwatch loot box whatever like route. So it's definitely an industry thing, and
they're generating more money, man. Like, I mean, as much as we all hate it, like, it is a profitable business model. Like, Overwatch is still making money off the same engine, off the same software, off the same player base. GTA is still making money off the same group of people.
And the interesting thing is, like, the consoles aren't the platforms anymore. The platforms are the games. Like, Overwatch is its own platform. Like, people, like, it's like, do you play? You play Overwatch, right? Yeah. It's like, do you play on your Xbox? It's like, it doesn't really matter. Overwatch is all I play.
Yo, how do I sound now?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, by the way, everybody in chat said I sounded fine that entire time.
That's weird.
Now I forgot my fucking question.
Well, you remember, you're the main guy in that situation, so you'll sound fine on the. On your side, because everything's being recorded through you or sent out through you, but to us, going to us, you got really crazy sound.
Yeah, I totally forgot my fucking question.
It was about like Xbox, not people not buying Sunset Overdrive.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Okay, so by the way, all those games you named, Sunset Overdrive, Rise, Quantum Break, I liked all those games. I thought they were all fantastic, you know, but the Xbox guys didn't buy them. So I want to ask you, you know, and it being Xbox guy, because you specifically said the community didn't buy these games. Why didn't they buy them? Because usually, you know, like we've said on this show, Xbox guys seem to like more competitive type of games. Do you think that's the factor? Like, what is your personal opinion on why those type of games that are good, did not sell?
It's tough to say. I mean, the Xbox is kind of the shooter box, right?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, Rise doesn't really fall in that category, neither does it in Sunset Overdrive or Quantum Break. I mean, Quantum Break's a third-person action game that really was probably more situated to PlayStation.
Mm.
You know, like that kind of third-person cinematic action game. That, like we,
that, that's what I was. That's actually somewhat of what I was thinking about it. Where it's not the fact that these games weren't appealing; it's the fact that they didn't appeal directly to the maybe to a lot of the Xbox community. These games seem, in a lot of ways, very Sony-like. You know what I mean?
Can I just call a spade a spade?
Go ahead, bro.
They're different demographics. I mean, you're not going to hear about this much because it's honestly business thing, and very few companies want you to know what their demographic is because they want you to feel like they're advertising to you, not to your demographic. That being said, I think everybody in the room can probably agree that the demographic audience, the people they are selling their consoles to, are not the same across both systems. I mean, obviously, the Nintendo does its own thing and is going for its own people, but I don't think that... I'm pretty sure that they're not the same group of people. I'm pretty sure Microsoft is aiming for 18 to 24-year-olds, and while 18 to 24-year-old males, and Sony is aiming for more of an inclusive, broad audience. And so you're going to see content that appeals to those groups of people flourish on one system while they don't flourish on another. I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong, man. I loved Halo when I was 19. I still love Halo now, but that kind of shooter box mentality, it's not that it's just shooters. It's that it's this over-the-top adrenaline, kind of like, you know, 80s crazy action movie. Like, there's a common theme that runs through a lot of the titles that Xbox tries to put out. And Sony tends to focus more on kind of cerebral, heavy narrative experiences, and that's not an accident, I don't think.
Yeah, and crazy ass anime games, don't forget about those.
yeah, that's true. My only point was that you're not gonna hear Microsoft or Sony say this, but they both know that they're targeting different audiences.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's like they won't disclose that because they want everybody to jump in on their systems, but they probably have a good idea who buys their systems.
Of course. I mean, they're not dumb. They know about when people say, oh, this is the bro box. You know what I mean? It's like, they know.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. All right. So let's move on. Rand, you going to stick around for the rest of the show, dude?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Because we got to talk.
As long as it doesn't go like 5 hours.
No. We're not that, man. We're not that type of show. By the way, this next topic made me rearrange the entire fucking show. Oh boy, bombshell. So EA has bought Respawn Entertainment. They bought them for over, I think it was like $455 million. Now, this is where it gets interesting. So this is where it gets interesting. Apparently, the South Korean developer of Nexon was going to buy Respawn, and EA was like, nope, we're coming in. So they outbid them. And, you know, if you looked at Twitter tonight, everybody went crazy with the memes. Like, that's it. Response dead. Because this is coming right off the heels off, you know, EA killing Visceral. And you know how many studios fucking EA has killed, you know? So, this is pretty crazy. So, Rand, as the guest, I want to get your thoughts on this first, man. What did you think when you, like, saw this shit?
My first thought was the Grim Reaper has come for Respawn. It's, you're on the clock now, right? Whether it's 3 years, 4 years, or 5 years, your time's up. And my second thought was like, wait a minute, Phil Spencer just talked about buying independent studios.
Should have jumped in on
that. I'm like, Respawn would fit in perfectly with the demographic, right? Definitely. Like, but then I was kind of looking into it, and EA hit first right of refusal on any takeover offers. So if Microsoft did put in a bid, EA just would have matched it. So if Microsoft really wanted to respond, they would have to grossly overpay for it.
Yeah.
So it probably never was an option. But it is interesting to see them shut down Visceral a couple weeks ago only to buy Respawn. Mm-hmm. A couple weeks later, makes you wonder, right, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, Jason Schreier, right, he actually broke down the timeline of this thing. Apparently it was Nexon wanted to buy, they wanted to buy Respawn. EA outbid him. You know, actually, no, EA was like, oh, we can't have that happening. They sold or they shut down Visceral. Then they bought them. You know, then they bought Respawn. So, yeah, the timing, the sequence of events, very interesting, man. Very interesting. And I do need to say this. I'm not going to name any names, but I was talking to a friend of mine who does a PR for EA. This was a few weeks ago, unrelated to this, but it, now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, wow, okay. So we were talking about just, you know, our daily routines and stuff. And I said that generally, you know, since I work for like an actual company, my day ends, you know, no later than 4 or 5, right? Unless news breaks at like 6 or 7. She goes, oh, yeah, when that happens, that means we don't want people to really talk about stuff. This shit dropped at 6:30 today. So obviously everybody knows what's going on, but why would EA drop this? Because this was an official thing. It wasn't a leak or anything. This is an official, you know, press release, and they dropped it so late into the day on a Thursday. You know, it's like, and I'm guessing this is just me speculating now. They did that because it would look bad because of what happened with Visceral. If the Visceral thing didn't happen, I'm pretty sure this would have been front news like last week when it supposedly actually happened. You know, what do you guys think about that? Because the timing is weird.
Xbox is aware that they are the Robox. EA is aware that they have a reputation for being the Grim Reaper of games. Not only does, you know, the board members know it, but like everybody in the game industry knows it. So I guarantee you that the people freaking out right now the most are the people who are now owned by EA.
Yeah.
That's the most unsettling thing you can hear is EA is your new boss. You're like, oh shit. So they have to be hyper aware of a reputation that prevalent, and so they have to be reacting to that. I don't see. Oh well, they didn't even think about that. Like, oh man, there's dumb, and then there's intentionally obtuse, and you're past dumb at this point. So this is either very much on purpose, or they're just sticking their fingers in their ears and going, la 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 la. We don't. Nobody knows anything bad about EA.
Yeah,
they have to know.
They know what's up. They have to. I mean, again, the timing was just really weird on Thursday night, you know, where nobody was really looking up for news, you know. I still think that otherwise this would have been it's still a big story, don't get me wrong, but it would have been like a bigger deal by EA, you know.
Say it won't explode tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, it will explode, but the thing is, you know, and I think all those fears are warranted. Did you guys see that infographic? Brett, I think you sent me that shit. All those fucking studios that EA closed, man. It's crazy. You know, like, you don't want to be bought out by EA. I know they were making Titanfall stuff for EA, but they were still independent. But now, if Titanfall 3 underperforms or that Star Wars game, you better watch out. But
that would have been the case either way, even if Respawn didn't have EA. If the third one comes out and that one underperforms, they're done with it.
Yeah, but they would still exist as an independent entity, understand?
Maybe. Yeah, well, what else are they producing? There's a difference. Maybe.
It's the difference between I'm going to fight this tiger with a knife and I'm going to jump into this volcano. Yes, you may have a 90% chance of perishing if you knife fight a tiger. You have 100% chance of perishing if you throw yourself into a volcano. I would challenge anybody who wants to argue with me this. Like, name me a company that EA has acquired that has done well since they've been acquired. And not just a horrible faceless shell of what they used to be.
The silence speaks for itself, man. The silence speaks for itself.
I want to say the sports series, because I know they didn't own it, but then they took over. It was a studio. I forgot the studio that was doing Madden before, but that's still going.
You know, and the thing is, you know, if you read the, you know, Kotaku's report on it, apparently, you know, the money they're getting is also predicated on how well the game does on Metacritic. So if you don't do well...
Well, remember what Metacritic is. It's a bunch of sites, just their reviews, not one review.
Yeah, no, but the thing is, the gaming industry, and Adam, you know, because the gaming industry, they give out bonuses, you know?
But it's like that everywhere. It's everybody gives a little something.
Well, no, there are specific studios like what they have in this contract that they, depending on what reviews that they get and the height of the reviews that they get, that studio gets like bonuses for that.
But remember, Metacritic is not only that; it's users. Users, if you're signed, you have to review it yourself.
But I don't. For the most part, they don't look at the user reviews.
Yeah, they don't.
They look at the general reviews from all the big sites. That's what they're really looking at.
But even though a game may review well, doesn't mean it's going to sell well. It's just like movies.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. There's there are plenty of games out there that have gotten very good reviews or decent reviews, and yeah, they have not.
Like Titanfall 2?
Titanfall 2.
Titanfall 2, critically acclaimed. Yeah, but, you know, well, Tomb Raider wasn't made by them, but yeah.
What about this conspiracy theory?
Yes, go for, by the way, shout out to Chris Cobra, who wanted, you know, you to talk about your conspiracy theory. Go ahead, man.
So I said last year, I didn't understand the reasoning between putting Titanfall 2 a week after Battlefield and the week before Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. Doesn't make any sense. It still doesn't make any sense, right? What if they did that purposefully to drive down the value of Respawn so that a year later they could buy them as a new developer?
Mm.
Like, they initially took the hit on the game so that they could buy it because it would lower the price of the asking value for Respawn because they would have this kind of failure on their hands. So that, they can buy them for cheaper.
That sounds so insane. I could actually see that actually happening. That, wow, you got me thinking, bro.
Because why else would you put Titanfall 2 a week after Battlefield, your own game, a week before Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, which, you know, sold the best-selling game of the year, even though it was a bad-selling Call of Duty. It's like Titanfall was going to get smashed where it was positioned, and they're the publisher. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, and as a publisher, they get to decide when the game comes out, right?
Yeah, that's right. Developer doesn't decide that.
Yeah, I remember they kept saying that. The head chief over at Respawn, he was like, it wasn't my choice. He's like, we finished the game, we told them, and they're like, this is the date it's being released. I'm like, all right. You know, and then he put all their marketing behind it, so what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw this.
Go ahead,
Brett. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to frame this a little bit differently. It's not as insane as I think that you think that it is, because let me say it in another way. Were they compelled for any reason to go out of their way to make sure that this game had a good release date that would make it successful for zero return on their part when they could just let it be released, flounder, and then acquire the studio for pennies on the dollar if it wasn't a commercial success? I want to remind people, maliciousness is not the root of these things. It is apathy. It is not, we're going to starve out all the people of this town so we can buy their land. It's, why should I go out of my way to subsidize these people when their misfortune is just going to be my game? So it's not as ludicrous as it sounds.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, it sounds actually, no, to me, it still sounds so crazy, but that's probably what happened because it benefits EA at the end of the day. It really does, you know?
Well, did you hear the story between EA and the Project Cars 2 developer?
No, what happened?
So I did a video about this a while ago. The CEO of the Project Car developer went on this, like, YouTube, he went on this YouTuber's channel. And he had this like open interview about Project Cars 2, and the topic of EA came up, and he hates EA because he said his company signed a deal to do Need for Speed Shift, right? And then they signed a deal to do Need for Speed Shift 2, and EA came to them and said, listen, we're going to do Need for Speed Shift 3, right? But we want you to sign this contract. We'll give you $5 million, but you cannot talk to any other publishers about any other games, right? So the CEO of Project Cars was like, okay, sure. Signed it, got the $5 million because he needed to pay his employees, right? But in the back of his mind, he said he thought something was weird. So he built a shell corporation and housed all the technology they were building, right? And the story goes that in these contracts they signed, any technology that was created for Need for Speed Shift 3 would be owned by EA, right? Mm. So when EA came and canceled the game and tried to take the technology, they couldn't because the guy was, you know, made a shell company to put the technology in. But also EA started to hire all the developers that were on the Project Shift game to work on a Need for Speed game. So he said EA intentionally tried to kill his company by, you know, signing the contract, which they had no intention ever of honoring.
Shit.
So it's there, like, EA does, and he mentioned it was Patrick Sutherland, the current CEO. He was completely behind it. So yeah, it's there, like, crazy stuff happens all the time, you know. So I just thought I'd bring it up because that kind of has a little bit of bearing on the stuff going on now. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, for sure. Wow.
Yo, man, what happened to the nice EA? The one that, you know, Trip Hawkins. Yeah, well, you know, Trip Hawkins and his 3DO. What happened to that?
But even Trip Hawkins was a gangster too, though, man. Remember how he got Sega Genesis cartridges and stuff? You know?
Yeah,
that's true.
So, yeah, Chris, get in here, man. What are your thoughts on this shit?
I think you have a completely freaking soulless publisher who, how many jobs did they end at Visceral?
Man,
120, 130.
Yeah, it was a lot.
That's a lot. Just so they could undercut a bid to acquire another studio to churn out another first-person shooter. This is the type of people you have. I don't know if they're human. You have like reptilians with ice water in their veins running these businesses. This is why they have to look at Metacritic combined with Excel spreadsheets, because they don't understand how human beings act.
So are you saying that they're just a bunch of things, like from the movie The Thing?
Not even thing. Like they're just like it's like teaching Data emotions, right? In TNG, it's like he doesn't understand. I don't understand laughter. I don't understand a joke. Like they don't understand like what compels people's good stories and good interaction. They don't understand that, right? Sold well, okay, do that more, right? That's all they understand. And when it doesn't sell, they go, okay, kill it. Like they don't look back and they don't reflect and they don't have any emotions. So this is what you get. You get heartless publisher. I feel bad for Respawn right now. Like, that fucking sucks.
Yeah, a lot of people are scared, man.
I just feel like it was inevitable.
Didn't they create that studio to get away from the
bonus? Activision was stiffing them on bonuses for Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Infinity Ward. And then that's when they're like, you know what, we don't need a big studio. And then they said, well, we'll just make our own. And that's why I thought Microsoft was going to buy them, because of Titanfall. I'm like, this is perfect. They're going to get a new IP. They need a new IP. And then they were so iffy on it. Remember that? They were like, oh, so is this the end? Oh, we'll see. And it turns out that it was just based off of sales, and the sales numbers for Titanfall 1 just weren't there. So then they were like, all right, well, we need to do something now. And EA jumped in and said, all right, we'll produce the next one. And now look what happened.
You remember, they were even part of EA, because Vince and those guys made Medal of Honor for EA.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was going to be bad blood.
Infinity Ward and did Metal, mm-hmm. and did Call of Duty for Activision. And now they're just back with EA again. I'm telling you, I would not be surprised if Vince Zampella leaves in a couple of years when it's got, like the original Doctors left BioWare, you remember?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yep. He'll probably leave.
After this check clears, he'll leave.
Well, all these guys, come on, all these guys are kind of hypocrites. Like, fucking Bungie left Microsoft because they became the Bungie, I mean, the Halo studio.
But they went on to become the Destiny studio.
That was all about money. They just wanted to make more money. You know, they wanted to own their IP and just make crap tons of money.
Yep.
Because obviously it was Microsoft making the money with Halo, not Bungie. But
why
yeah.
Why doesn't Bungie just make a marathon game? Why not? Don't they own that?
No, they don't want to make
that. What happens? Do you think Activision's going to buy Bungie one of these days? I always kind of wait for it to happen.
I think so.
I could see that happening. Oh, man.
Destiny 2 takes off and lasts like GTA with making millions and millions.
Oh, it's
four
not.
Years later. It's, yeah. No. Well, that's it.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, Destiny 2 ain't got legs like that. Brian, man, get in here. What are your thoughts on EA and Respawn, dude?
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. It feels like a slap in the face. Like, I'll be so pissed if I worked for Visual Games like right now. Because it's like, they literally just turned to you and said, hey, you know what? You guys aren't making enough cash. Like, there's the door. Fuck off. And then at the same time, you see, like, Respawn Games just like walking the other way. It's like, where are they going? Like a meeting with EA. Like, okay, must be bad news as well. And then all you hear is like fireworks and champagne. It's like, what the fuck? Seriously, it's just insulting. It honestly is insulting. And as most people on Twitter have said, this just means like the countdown has begun. Because this is, yeah, I don't have no faith in EA.
Final countdown.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm glad you bring that point up, Brian, because a lot of people have said it's like, yo, this is really like a slap in the face to Visceral. It's like okay, you guys aren't good enough. We're gonna go with these guys. It's like, yeah, I can see that. You know, I expect a lot of think pieces on this tomorrow. You know,
well, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear a little bit of like some of the creative coming over, or some of the people behind the scenes from Visceral, because they said they were going to keep some of them and put them on other projects.
Yeah, that's right, well, yeah.
This could be one of those projects. It was like, hey, this was in the works. We don't like the studio as a whole, but we like what they're doing over here. They need more help because working on another Titanfall project. Hey, you art guys, you can come over. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, you know Titanfall 3 is not going to release the week after the next Battlefield now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, you're right about that. By the way, some of the guys in the chat are asking, will Respawn get a proper funeral, you know, when the time comes, and did Visceral get a proper funeral? My question is, what is a proper funeral for a video game company, man? Right.
Yeah. You press F. Yeah,
the doors close. That's the proper funeral.
Damn, I mean, man.
Mass Effect had its funeral 2 days ago on N7 Day.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, N7 Day, and it was like, yeah, what's happening with N7 Day? Nothing, because Mass Effect is effectively on ice, you know? Damn, EA, man. Shit.
Killer of Dreams, Killer of Studios.
Yeah.
I posted this in the chat for you guys, but for everybody else, if you want to know where Respawn sits right now, just remember that point in Monty Python where they bring out your dead? That's them right now.
I'm not dead.
Not dead yet. Yes, you are.
I don't know.
I'm feeling much better. You know, you'll be stone dead in a minute.
No, jeez, man, that's bad. All right, let's move on here to another topic. This one's gonna be fun. All right, so this week, an analyst predicted that. Let me finish this one, people. This is crazy. That the Nintendo Switch by the year 2023 will have sold 115.8 million units. That's Wii levels right there. And Chris, I know you had some shit to say about that, man.
That's beyond Wii levels. That's approaching PS2 sales right there. No, I thought like this guy is getting his hands on some great crack in Japan. Like, I was like, wow, I didn't know they hang like that. But he works for Wall Street Journal in Japan. He tweeted out that by the end of this fiscal year, they would have hit 23 million, which is what caught my attention. I'm like, wait, hold on. You're saying by March 31st of next year, they hit 23 million. And I immediately wrote to him. I'm like, dude, you see that they had to ramp up production? They can't make that many systems alone, like make 23 million by then. They're going to sell that many? Oh, what numbers you're looking at? But you get paid to do that, so that's great for you.
He didn't answer back, of course.
No, he didn't. You know, because like while I sit here and show everybody all these numbers and why I say the things I do or make the predictions I do, he could just go online because he works on the Wall Street Journal and make this crazy tweet and have everybody cheering. And it's like, but this idiot didn't show you anything. It's like, where are you getting that from? Like, I don't know what inside track you have or if you have a time machine or whatever, but that's, I call the complete bullshit on his analysis of that and his predictions.
And where's this coming from? You know what I'm saying? Like, where are people bringing up these crazy numbers from?
Right, exactly. Like, making a prediction out to 2023. I mean, we've already talked about by 2020, we're going to have PS5 and next Xbox in between there. And as I said in the tweet to him, I said, Nintendo doesn't exist in a bubble. You seem to forget they're in a video game industry that is highly competitive. So to say that they're just going to somehow generate not only this many shipped units by March of next year, it's ridiculous, and then hit 115 million by 20, you're insane. Like, there's no way that's happening. I said they could maybe get, you know, 60 or 70, depending. How do you know there's not going to be a revision of the Switch? How do you know they're not going to do something else in between that time? You don't know. Like, so it was ridiculous. The whole thing was, and you could go on his Twitter. Like, I should put in the notes or something to go find it, this tweet.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, he was just reporting on it. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was Nomura Securities that made this prediction, you know?
Right, but, like, you know, you have a responsibility as a journalist to go like, you know, sounds a little odd.
Yeah.
Let me pick through this a little bit, you know? Not just regurgitate it.
Isn't that what journalism is now, especially gaming journalism?
Pretty much. As a gaming journalist, 90% of the shit we do is regurgitating shit. Let's just be honest.
They just have to find it in a different spot now that NeoGAF's dead.
Yeah. Oh, man. Brett, what were you going to say, man? I hear you getting ready back there.
Oh, I too like to wildly speculate about things 5 years into the future. here's my thing about this. So you are effectively talking about a timescale of roughly 60 months, of which we are about 8 into. That is way too early to be calling any kind of pattern for anything. I'm not even taking this in context of what this is like. I'm not even talking sales trends. I'm just saying you cannot project accurate data that far out with that little information. You can try and make a graph with only 3 plot points, but it's by its nature going to be highly inaccurate, and you're aware of that when you're making it. When you are making an infographic with limited information or a prediction off of limited information, you're usually pretty aware that this is probably going to be pretty far off. So I'm just wondering, like, where you get the balls to make this kind of prediction this far out, this early. Because at the very least, even if you have substantial information at your side right now, you have to realize that it is just one piece of a much larger puzzle that you don't have the context to frame all this in. There is literally no way, like Chris said, unless you have a time machine, that you can know this. The data isn't there to pull this conclusion from. That's full stop. That is not my opinion. There is not. You can make conjecture. You can't necessarily prove it wrong. There is no way to prove that right with that limited amount of data. It's just, I mean, am I wrong, Chris?
No, you're absolutely right. So what I was going to say is, like, look, going into 2023, I have no idea. The Switch could sell that many, we don't know. But you cannot come out as a security agency and as an authority on projections and investments and make a statement like that unless you are, and I hate to say this, this is going into conspiracy theory now, unless you are trying to affect the stock of Nintendo, right? So I'll leave it at that. Like, that is my speculation. Like, there's no way. Brett is absolutely right. There's no way to make that 5 years out. You could make a generalized, but to make such definitive, like, numbers, like they were not at a ballpark, 100 plus million, 100. No, they nailed it, right?
Yeah, so 115.8 exactly.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Right. So that tells me that, okay, there's some vested interest in here to inflate the stock, probably because maybe they have some link or buy it. So that's my conspiracy theory, because this is kind of irresponsible reporting unless it was done on purpose.
Yeah. I just want to give some perspective to this. The 3DS is a wildly successful platform that sold a lot of units, and they're really milking the shit out of it right now. It's only sold 66 million worldwide in its lifetime. So you're saying this is going to outsell that by almost twice as much? Right. Like, I don't know
Yeah, you know, he's saying it will outsell the Wii. The Wii stopped at, what, 101 million, 102 million? So yeah, he says it blows past the Wii. It's going to hit 4 million under lifetime PS2, right? And I think beat the DS, which is Nintendo's best-selling system of all time. I forget the DS numbers.
No, it'll be under the DS, I think.
It'll be under the DS? Okay.
Yeah, DS was 154.
Oh, okay. All right, so what was PS2 then? Okay, I was wrong.
PS2 is 157. That's like the best-selling platform of all time.
Okay, so yeah, but to outdo the Wii, you already have the hardware. We already know what the Switch is and whatever. that have to be spectacular games and a spectacular maybe failure on Microsoft's and Sony's part going into the next 5 years. Right? And all this, stuff. Yeah. This confluence of things that have to happen that I don't see how you could call that. So whether it's wildly successful or not, it's not ours to say. We haven't even gotten into a year. And the fact that they said 23 million at the end of this fiscal year, I'm like, what are you smoking? Well, we just had supply shortages and all this stuff. I just did the financial report, and they were hit at the end of September. They hit over 7 million units, so 7.8. They're probably over 8 or maybe 8, between 8 and 9 right now, right? So to go take that number and quadruple it by March 31st is like insane. Like, that's ridiculous. So I don't know where it's coming from.
I want to make an allegory, or I want to make a point here. This isn't even exaggeration or hyperbole. I'm being very literal when I say this, and I want to make this clear. There is more empirical evidence that a hurricane will hit Atlanta, Georgia in April of 2022 and take down half of its power grid than there is to substantiate that there will be this many sales units sold. And I make that connection because it's just like that. It's like trying to predict a storm 4 years in the future. I can look at hurricane patterns. I can tell you where general landfall is. I can tell you that there seems to be an increase, and they seem to be generally drifting a certain direction and moving further inland, and they seem to generally do this sort of damage. And I can tell you that Atlanta, Georgia has an infrastructure that would probably not be sustained for that. So I can honestly tell you there's more evidence for me predicting a storm 4 years from now than there is for this. And I am not a trained meteorologist. So to put that in perspective, just some jackass on the internet has a better chance of predicting the weather 4 years in the future than this article has of being right.
Oh man! By the way, Chris Cobra says that don't jinx him, Brett, because he lives in Georgia. Oh man, Rand, what are your thoughts on the Switch selling this many units in 5 years?
Man, I already taken an L on the Switch. I said it would be a failure, just like the Wii U. So I'm eating my crow. I mean, we haven't even been through one holiday yet. Right, so yeah. We don't even know what the velocity of sales are going to be like. You guys remember what the Wii sold at the holiday season? Like, weren't those things like sound like 5 million a month in November and December?
Oh, it was stupid.
Yeah, it was like a ridiculous number. We haven't even gone through one holiday season. We don't know the highs, how high the Switch can even get yet. So to try to predict,
we do know based off of units that they've created. That's what we do know.
We don't even know how much they can produce.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know if they can make 3 million a month, 4 million a month, 2 million a month. I'm sure Nintendo has an outlook for how many they think they can sell 5 years from now or 6 years from now, but I doubt they're telling anybody, right?
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Here's another thing that we're not taking into account. The Switch is a success to gamers. I don't see grandmas lining up in Walmart to buy a Switch.
Yeah.
I see gamers lining up to buy a Switch. Like, right. The Wii hit lightning in a bottle times 10.
Like, yeah, because they were going greenfield. They were reaching out to people who weren't gamers and attracting people because of Wii Sports and Wii Fit. People didn't play games were buying into the Wii. Now they've got Switch has gone back more core. There's a much smaller market, you know? Say before, like a competitive market where mobile is expanding and you have to compete with two other giant companies who are also in video games. Like, that's a difficult sell to me. A, the fiscal one is stupid, but 5 years out to make that kind of prediction, I'm like, please present the time machine that you're using to get that.
And it's because of that, because I saw, you know, Chris, you saw it. Every site ran with it. I didn't write about that shit. I'm like, nope, I'm not writing that bullshit. You know, you don't know that, you know, it's fucking retarded. You know, and the thing is, you know, we are basing our, our theories or whatever based off what Nintendo has shown us so far, you know, and Rand, just quickly, I was one of those guys too. I had to eat crow. I thought the Switch would be an abysmal failure. It wasn't. But at the same time, that shit ain't selling no 23 million by the end of April. That's crazy, man. They haven't even been able to produce that many, you know?
I'm on the other end of the spectrum. Like, I've been accused of just completely drinking the Kool-Aid. And I've been honestly at first a crow eating hesitant advocate, but as time went on, like, I've become a huge advocate of the system in general. So even my opinion of, like, okay, this is just fucking crazy. Like, I get it. Everybody wants to hear a story about how Nintendo actually managed to pull this one out of the hat and produce something that we've all wanted. And that we've managed to get back to a place, at least with Nintendo, apparently, where they're producing third-party games. Like, everybody wants to hear the story that the heyday of the healthy, thriving three consoles is coming back. That's the story we all want. And I realize that everybody wants to jump the gun to fucking tell that story, but the numbers aren't there. All you can write is opinion pieces about it right now. You can't point to the numbers and say how successful it's going to be, because as time has shown, the only reliable thing is that the only reliable metric in any of this is that there are no reliable metrics, that people's tastes change, and that just because something follows a growth curve at the beginning of its life cycle does not mean it's going to follow a similar pattern to its projected trajectory or of other consoles. I mean, each Game Boy sells a different fucking amount. Each PlayStation sells a different amount. There is no way to map, you know, no matter how many graphs you take from 2006 or, you know, 1998 or what have you, and try and show the similarities between systems, you're never going to get two life cycles that are exactly the same, which is why it's just kind of silly for people, and it's silly for people to be saying that this is immediately going to be a failure, and I've said that from the beginning, and I've very publicly butted heads with Tony on it on a couple of occasions. But I'm also saying, I'm also being reasonable here, at least I think, and saying it is also not fair to take those numbers and say what a success the Switch is going to be. Again, there simply isn't enough data in to make these calls. If you say anything, it's going to be framed as an opinion. For example, I personally think the Switch is going to do really well. I think that it hits a sweet spot in terms of availability, price points, name recognition, and software that's going to help propel it to be everybody's second system, which is a financially advantageous place for Nintendo to be. Can I prove that? No. No fucking way. Nobody can. And that's the goddamn point.
Yeah, there you go, Nintendo. But yeah, the projection. By the way, hey Chris, what were the projections for how well Pan Am would be doing now? What were they back in 1950?
Okay, I'll tell you something. Pan Am back in 19 1960s, they were selling tickets for post 2000 to fly on their space planes. That's how well they thought they were doing 50 years ago, that people were prepaying for flights into space on that airline. So, yeah.
Yeah, and where's Pan Am now, you know?
We live in an age of, oh, wait, that guy's a pedophile? I just thought he really liked kids and really hated pedophiles. Like, in the last 4 years, think about the number of icons, and I'm not even going to bring up the current embroiled scandal that everything is focusing on right now, but think of the amount of celebrities, of icons, who have turned out to be something very different than what you thought that they were. People that you followed and on Twitter or whatnot, somebody that you maybe idolized, that turned out to be a shithead. And think how wrong you were. That's exactly what I was thinking, but think about how wrong you can be in the span of just a few years. I cannot impress this enough that nobody has this crystal ball. Nobody, that things are changing so fast, not just in this vector, but in everything, that who's to say Nintendo will even be a company in 5 years? Who's to say that we will all be in a nuclear war in 5 years? Fucking nobody.
Yo, I'm not gonna get too graphic with it, but when you were saying, you know, talking about the scandals and Nintendo, I'm thinking, like, yo, what if in like 2 years you find out something really horrible about Shigeru Miyamoto? Oh,
dude, I was about to say, like, what? Okay,
that's it. It's over. You know,
what if in 2 years you find out that Nintendo had groped a bunch of Hollywood celebrity actresses? Oh
shit, man.
You mean, know, Nintendo, like just the entity of it, yeah, like just the building. Yeah.
Yeah, just grabbed him by the nose.
I'm thinking like, yo, what did Reggie end up doing, son? Did you hear about Reggie? But the point is you never know what could happen. You don't know what could happen in a year from now, let alone 5 years. So this prediction is fucking crazy, you know? All right, let's move on here to the final topic. And going back to EA here, this is interesting. I threw this one in here for Adam, but you know, we could all jump in, obviously. So EA may not release sports games every year in the future. Because you know how
about
it is.
Time.
It's about time. We've been saying this forever. We've been saying this shit. It's like,
but
listen,
they're not going to do it. It's not about time.
No. Adam, because you made a really good point. We'll get to that. But this is where I'm coming at it from, right? I'm like, okay, these games are always the same every year. They just have different rosters. So why not update it with a new roster every year? But obviously, the reason they're not going to do it is because they make too much fucking money every year. You know, because
people. You just turned into a microtransaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's there even room for DLCs in these games, is my question. Because
it's fun. It's fun, man. It's fun and mud. That's where they made, $800 million last year.
No. That's what I'm saying. Like, where. And this is legitimately my question. How do they jam, like. Okay, so if they release a new game every year, why would you buy the season pass for a game that's going to get a new version next year? I realize that they make money in it, but my point is, like, for the most part, people will buy. They'll either buy the new version or the update. Like, where are you even really selling your fucking DLC? Like,
that's what I'm saying. It's not a season pass. It's mutt and fut. It's the ultimate team. It's the card game that's in there. Those card games is what makes all the money. They made $800 million just from FIFA's foot. That's why they put it in Madden. That's why they're putting all these other cards and loot box and all the other stuff, because they saw it work with FIFA.
Yeah, you know? So why would you reset that? Why?
They're not going to reset. They're not going to remove it, because if they remove it, they know it's not.
Remember, guys, this is EA. You know what they plan to do? Turn this into a subscription service.
That's my point exactly. Like, here, okay, so you buy Sports Ball 2017, right? But instead of Sports Ball 2017, it's now Sports Ball 20X. Okay, now you buy those card things for it. But instead of paying into something that you know is going to be obsolete in less than a year, you're paying into a Destiny model. We are constantly chasing this digital dragon. I think that's honestly going to be more lucrative for them.
They can't do it, because think about it. It makes people go out and buy these games at a full $60 price every year. It's in the top 10 for like the majority of the year. Until it gets dropped off and no one spends the $60 just to play that one day in mode, there's no motive to do it. There's no motivation for it.
But
that one lump sum, then hoping that you're going to subscribe for the legacy editions and all the updates, as opposed to, damn, they're already buying it at full 60, and we're doing little tweaks here and there.
I think the thing is, but if you think about it, like with this idea, you know, with this idea of them just doing it every, you know, 2 years or something like that, thing is that, you remember, they're still updating the game. They're still putting more. They're, you know, who's the hot card this year? You know, they update mutt and foot, the baby words, you know, for, you know, every year. So it's still
every
happening.
Year they do it every week. And they
instead of just, you know, they would, you see, even said it yourself, they make way more money off of these internal card games, these internal mini game card games inside of the actual game than the actual title.
Exactly. And if they were to sell that separate, there would be no justification for a $60 price. They would have to lower it to like a $20 or $30 price. And
I think for them, it makes perfect sense. You've already invested in the $60 for that one thing. And then you just wait, you know, they just continue to add cards and stuff, and people pay like, you know, $4 here, $5 here, or $1,000,000,000 here. And they make way more money off of that because of those small transactions that they're doing.
It's been about 3 or 4 years that they've had FIFA Online, which is that version in China, and they never brought it over. So it's got to be because it just sells so well by itself, just in the game, you know, just the whole FIFA package. So they're like, there's no reason to change that. Eventually, what he was talking about is, yeah, it'll probably get to that point because there's only so many changes you can do. We're seeing it now where they're just trying to figure out other ways of just making money, and people are waking up to it. But until that point happens where they're like, you know what, we're looking at the MPDs and we're not seeing FIFA up there. We're not seeing NBA 2K up there anymore. Maybe the first week or first month and then it drops off. I doubt it'll ever happen though. So yeah. I think if they want to really talk about, it's not even them, it's Activision, do it with Call of Duty. You know, Call of Duty, easily, you can just, and I think they sort of do that with some of them, because, I mean, Infinite, COD, Call of Duty Infinite just had another DLC pack drop like a few months ago. You know, so it's still going, even though there's another one out. So it's like they're still overlapping. You know, it's like a wave effect. And so, we'll see. I mean, they all want to chase that one goal, which is GTA. That GTA online format works. That made a lot of money. They're always adding little tweaks here and there. It's still the same game, though, you know, and they're making money hand over fist. And they all want that. But the closest to that is FIFA. That Ultimate Team is killing it. You know, people love that. I don't know anybody that plays FIFA or anything else besides that. Journey mode was added to give people that don't play FIFA that foot for that. But besides that, I mean, that's all I play it for.
Yeah,
and that's why most people went to jail for it.
Shit, hey, Rand, what are your thoughts on this, man? The annual, annual sports games and all that shit.
I mean, it's tough because, like you said, like every single year they come out with this the product, and everybody still buys it for 60, right? And then they still spend money on the Madden Ultimate Team, the FIFA stuff. So do they make it a subscription service where you pay $20 a year or $30 a year to get updated? And then hope more people spend more money on the FIFA and Madden stuff because it's not just going to be useless after this iteration of Madden, right? I mean, because so you know, like, I can invest in this platform because it's the platform is going to be here for 3 years. But I think publishers are too, especially EA, are probably too money hungry because I think they want that influx of cash. They want that $60 purchase, which is why, like, something like Destiny 1 didn't just continue on, and Destiny 2 wasn't just an expansion a la like World of Warcraft or something, because they wanted another game. They wanted the hype cycle again. They wanted to sell you a $60 and $100 version again, right? And then a few years from now, we'll get Destiny 3. I don't know, man. I'm sure they're probably working in their EA's accounting offices trying to figure out like a cost analysis of like, okay, how does this work out? Where are we going to make the most money? If we release a box product every single year, this is what we make versus, well, if we don't release the box product, but we let everybody subscribe for $20 every year, this is potentially how much we can make, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And if EA felt that they would make more money doing it subscription service and not selling it every single year, they'd probably go that route and test it on something. But they wouldn't test it with FIFA first. They wouldn't test it with Madden. They would have to test it with a smaller game.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. But remember, even EA said they're thinking about it, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. So, you know, don't hold off on this. You said, but I could actually see this happening. You know, because people just seem to just buy, like Adam, you said they make most of their money off digital shit. You know,
yeah, it's all digital shit.
So it could happen. It could happen. You know, very interesting, man. So yeah, go ahead.
Because you think about it, like. How many people, what they'd have to look at is how many people don't buy Madden and FIFA cards, right?
Yeah.
Because then the whole point would be to get those people, find out the reasons they don't spend their money on that stuff. And if the reason is, what's the point? Because there's a new game coming out next year. And if the responses and the focus tests all point to that as being the reason, then maybe it becomes an even like bigger like challenge for them because they know the reason why you're not buying their DLC. So then they can attack that, you know?
Well, and also I want to add on to that if they do find out that people are hesitant to spend money because of an expiring platform, the reason microtransactions work is because you spend more money than you realize. So you'd be putting them in a position where all of a sudden they're opened up to the idea of like, well, now I'm opening that up to the idea of microtransactions. They'll probably spend more than $60 accidentally than they would buying the physical copy. That's the whole idea behind why microtransactions work, is you actually get people to end up paying more money for the content than they otherwise would. So I just want to point out that system that you talk about works. And not only does it work, but sometimes it works better. So breaking that seal of I'm not paying for microtransactions could actually bring them more money than they're currently making just by the very nature of microtransactions. You get bored of the game after 3 months, you spend $20. Now 3 months later, you spend $20. Now 3 months later, you spend $20. Not a big deal, right? But instead of buying a $60 copy of the game every year, you bought $80 worth of DLC over the course of a year. That's $20 more in their pocket.
It's a great point, you know. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to do whatever they think is going to make them the most amount of money and whatever they could get away with, to be honest. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But, yeah,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
Tony, you saw Take-Two's financials thing this week, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Where 48% of their net revenue was literally from loot boxes and microtransactions.
Yeah, they made half most of their money off GTA Online. Think about that.
Yeah. And for the first time ever, Ubisoft said that microtransactions and DLC made them more money than game sales.
Shit.
So we're in that era where microtransactions... I mean, and you know what the funny thing is? Is this isn't like all gamers. This is like a subset of gamers. The ones who are willing to spend $15,000 like that producer said of Mass Effect 3 where a guy spent $15,000, you know?
Yeah,
like,
on Mass Effect 3...
Yeah, the thing is that I feel like it's the not gamery gamers.
Yeah,
the ones that are not in the know, the ones that are just accept these things for what they are, rather than, you know, I feel like the people that are actually complaining about it is actually a small set.
I agree with that too. Yeah, so we are in the minority here. The casuals, mm-hmm. they're the majority. We always forget about those. Those are the people that buy games en masse in millions, right? They're perfectly happy with this shit, you know.
And they're trained too. That's the thing the industry loves.
Yeah,
the mobile market trains these young kids from when they first entered gaming to buy these microtransactions, and now they've grown up to expect these things in the games because, you know, they transition to PlayStation or Nintendo, so it feels natural. It feels okay to spend $2 on a loot crate or $10 on this. Because, well, they've been trained since they were kids. That's how it works on iPhones and other places, you know?
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. We've said that on the show before. It's like, because people are wondering, like, how did this happen? Because of mobile gaming. That's why it happened. You know, and think about it like this. Like, yeah, you know, normally guys like us dismiss mobile gaming. That's the sector of the industry that makes the most amount of money. You don't think the console makers want that a piece of that pie? Of course they do. You know, so this is how you get shit like that.
There's another facet to that, too. There was a time... A long time ago, and I blame most of this on Blizzard, where we changed the idea fundamentally of gaming from having fun to completing an activity. And while it doesn't sound like a huge shift, it started this whole arms race of the carrot on the stick, and it became more about keeping you at least mildly entertained and pacing you throughout the game to create artificial content, okay? Now, the thing about that is they've stretched this out in multiplayer games to increase the lifespan of these multiplayer games. But then there are people who don't have the time to put those in, the easy response to these people is a microtransaction. My point being, you cannot have microtransactions in inherently skill-based games unless they are generally cosmetic. For the most part, microtransactions work in games like Battlefront, where you kind of have to level up, you have to get new perks to be better, you have to advance through the game in order to be better, not just be a better person. Like, I don't see microtransactions working really well in a Souls game, because if it gave you a blatant edge, it would be clear play, pay to win. But the rest of the game is very focused around the idea of skill. So, but in games like Destiny, for instance, it would be very easy to do that because that game is either built to consume time or money. And people don't necessarily have a problem with exchanging time for money. So this whole thing is predicated on the idea that we live in an environment of gaming where a main purpose of a game is to consume your time. Not necessarily by being so entertaining that you want to play the game over and over and over and over and over, but just in a way that we want to hit a certain hour mark so you feel like you've reached this much content.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't be able to exist in this in the world if that environment wasn't already there.
And it's crazy. Shout out to Black Metal, who just threw us a dollar, man. Appreciate that, brother.
Thank you, Black Metal.
A dollar in a dream.
You know, all right. So that's going to do it for us. So, Rand, man, I want to thank you again for being on. I hope you had fun with us tonight. And I appreciated the knowledge you dropped on us tonight, bro.
Hey man, I had a good time. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It was fun getting to listen to everybody talk about you know, Switch and everything. It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. And please plug your stuff. Where can people find you?
If they want to check me out, I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/RandallThor19. You can check out, everything is pretty much there, my Twitter and all the other stuff. So thanks.
Awesome. All right. So thank you guys for watching and listening. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Twitch, Mixer, Twitter, and Facebook at Throwdown Show. Links are located in the description below. Once again, our show is Tony Polanco, and tonight is joined by Emilio Lopez.
Get her ready to kill some replicants.
Whoa. Get it easy.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Ah, one word, man. Yukakuramoti, man. Fuck you, Tony, man. I swear.
Did you call me, son?
It's an inside joke between me and Tony. But
yeah.
I'm,
oh yeah.
Chris and Brian know what's up too.
Yep. All right. Brett Murdoch.
It's been real, everybody.
Adam Vale.
COD is fun.
And Mr. Brian Majoma.
You know what? Hey, go get you. Okay, 60 minutes.
Brian with that shot. Yeah. Oh man. Alright guys, we'll see y'all next time, man. Peace out.
Don't get that Doom Switch. Too much.
Later guys.
Later. Peace.